What's up, everybody? Welcome to Value Town. I'm Chan Man V. Got three great guys here to discuss some cards and decks and meta and everything with you guys today. Leading us off, we've got the leader of Team Archon, Amaz. What's up, Amaz?
Yeah, doing good. Just finished streaming and excited to do the show, I guess.
Well, great to have you on, man. His teammate here, we've got reigning world champion, or BlizzCon world champion. When's the last time you heard that, Barbat?
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
I don't know if it comes up a lot for some reason.
Oh, well, that's good. That's definitely good. And lastly, we've got a member of the winning team from this past weekend's ATLC from Team Nylum, Tice. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, doing good. Back in Europe now and getting back in the right time zone, but doing good.
That's good. Seems like everybody seems to be still in the Archon house, so I guess you're not in the Archon house now. That's good. Well, okay, guys. Well, I wanted to have you guys on again to talk some cards, but wanted to lead off with some ATLC or Archon Team League Championship talk. So, yeah, it was a huge event that happened this past weekend. Amaz, you know, you being the organizer, I mean, just like a huge undertaking, and it was a huge success in my eyes. So kind of wanted to see what you thought of it, you know, just being the kind of, you know, person that was behind everything.
Yeah, I hope it was a good success. That appeared that everybody was super organized, the matches were exciting, all the players were well taken care of, all the casters, you know, were well taken care of and enjoyed the event too. So I would label it as a success, I guess. Overall, it went pretty well. I wish that RDU and Eloise could actually make the main event. That's like my first regret, I guess, because the dates were a little bit too early. So we will definitely like try to fix that up for next time we do this. But yeah, overall, it went really well. Production, there were, you know, some internet drops and whatnot, but overall, it went really, really smoothly. The production value did shoot up quite a bit, and yeah, I think overall it was really, really good.
Well, I mean, it broke the record as the most viewed Hearthstone event to date, right? Beating the BlizzCon, so, I mean, that's fabulous.
Yeah, well, so that just speaks to Hearthstone's growth, right?
Oh, what? Fire! Fire! Oh, my God. That's great.
Nice. What did you
say? That wasn't you.
But yeah, you know, Hearthstone's just a growing game. Everybody's, you know, trying to catch up with it and whatnot. I think Blizzard announced like there were like 30 million users not too long ago, right? So yeah, obviously the viewers are just going to improve. And I think that BlizzCon this year is going to even get even more viewers, right? Obviously. So yeah, really excited about where this game is headed. It's headed in a good direction. And you know, shows like Value Town, for example, you know, just helps the community out more. So I'm really glad you came back, Chad, man.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I'm definitely happy to be back and doing the show again. Firebat types, as players, you know, having this team league available to you, I mean, the cash prize is huge, too. What does this type of league mean to you guys?
Different sort of formats, different changes away from the normal is good, because it got pretty boring there for a little bit when everyone was just doing just standard conquest for everything.
Yeah.
So just even a little bit of change was really good, and it's changed that actually has some meaning behind it, because it's changed it as a real prize pool at the end. A lot of the tournaments that tend to like start doing any sort of change or whatever, their prize pool is really limited. It's just like a small little 8-man tournament usually, but this was like a main event, so that was really cool.
Tice?
Yeah, and I really like the team perspective to have like a team league where you play with teams together. It's a really unique thing. It also, you feel a bit more pressured probably. You don't want to lose for your teammates. And yeah, the format, I really loved it. Best of 11 as a team. There comes a lot of strategy behind. And yeah, it was exciting for me actually, the whole 10 weeks that we played in it.
Yeah, for Nylum, I mean, how much did you guys get together and strategize? Because, you know, some teams like Value Town, I think it was more prevalent, you know, people could, you know, were hearing more about just the, some of the strategy, just because of Trump and Kibler talking about and things. But we didn't hear as much from you guys, so I kind of want to get some, you know, just a little bit of insight as to how much you guys met up and really strategized.
We did a lot of calls online. I think we practiced like we practiced a lot actually. We were always testing stuff. We talked everything over. We decided what were the best decks to go with against this team, and then we decided how are we gonna switch that up over the three persons, and yeah, everyone was a bit going their own way, but it was always planned as a team to make sure that we have a good lineup for the next week, and sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't really work out, and at the end we made a long run, but at the end it really paid off, so yeah, it feels good.
Well, yeah, definitely. And you winning, actually, you were a little emotional at the end, too, which was, you know, as a viewer and as a fan, you know, it's really cool to see that. And that's kind of what I want to see at events. And so talk to me a little bit about that. Why'd you get all choked up?
Yeah, it was probably, to be honest, at that moment, I didn't, like, it starts really slowly for me now to realize, actually, that what happened. And now I'm home, I'm starting to realize it a bit more, but there it was just, yeah, it was a bit of an unbelievable feeling, maybe, because the last day we played 11 hours in a row, and it was such a rush, and I never had long breaks, and we were just going. It was like a train going, and we were not stopping, and then at the end, after so much work, just after 10 weeks, and then just doing it where you worked for 10 weeks, it was... It felt a bit emotional, yeah, at the end. So I think that's only cool, so...
Yeah, definitely. Rightfully so, man. That's definitely good. So, Maj, you mentioned that the next season's going to start in January, like in just the finale of the whole the whole event. So, I mean, it's something definitely we have to look forward to. But planning-wise, you know, it's like I know kind of what it's like to plan events. How do you actually arrange that already? Is it just something that you were just committed to doing before, you know, trying to figure out the money side of things? Because I know this one, you invested a lot of money into this one, personally. So was it just really committing to having that date more so than having everything prepared already?
Tentatively January.
Tentatively January, all right.
I think it's like last time when we were on the planning stages of the ATLC, some people spoiled it.
Oh, right.
And then we got some unneeded stress with sponsors and whatnot. So I think it's better for me to just spoil it myself and change the day later on. And that's just a bit better. Because, the money part of the first league was, it was quite something. But then it's interesting because when we were planning this league, I actually noted that there wasn't anything going on between, what was May, right? Or June, something like that, to BlizzCon, right? There was just like a gap of nothing's happening.
Right.
So I was like, okay, we gotta do something. And at that same time, there were leagues going on as well. Am I DC'd?
No, I can't.
I think I am DC'd.
I think you're not, but...
No. Whoa.
Now you are.
Now they are.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, they both are.
Now they both came back on. Okay.
Okay. That was
something weird happened with the Archon internet.
That's okay.
Yeah, but hopefully we're back. I'm just gonna continue.
Yeah, continue. It's cool.
Yeah. At that time, there were about like five leagues that were announced. Like there are so many leagues that everybody's going for. And,
right.
You know, there's not like that one big one that everybody needs to watch and whatnot. So attaching like a big prize pool, obviously, you know, gets it out there or something. And of course, the cool format that not all the leagues are doing. Mm-hmm. Everything like kind of helped out. And on that kind of topic, I'm actually really happy that like Nihilum won, because they're kind of one of the teams that like, you know, discuss about strategy, you know, do the teamwork thing, compared to some other teams where they're like mainly just strong individual players, maybe. The other team that I think had a very good team synergy was Value Town, just like the show, Trump, Kibler, and Dog. They did pretty well. They got third, which is quite a good finish. I think they should have gone a little bit further, but really enjoyed the team dynamic of the whole league.
You thought they should have gotten a little further? What does that mean?
Okay, but then I guess Revco, Colento, and Ekop, that's a very, very good team.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think one of the... When we talked in the end... When Nihilum beat Cloud9, I was starting to like Strifeco and whatnot, and it ended up that they only changed one card in the whole 6X, right? They just changed Freezing Trap into Snake Trap, and Nihilum kind of outplayed them in the deck selection, and even during the games, some people were making some mistakes, and maybe that was due to them not playing any games during that day and only have the last series to play. so they were kind of like just doing nothing until then.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like having the momentum thing. But yeah, just gonna change things up hopefully. The only problem was that second day the internet went down, so the third day was kind of longer. It was supposed to be like just normal. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe next time we'll have like two ISPs and just a little bit of an extra backup.
Yeah, I don't think people understand like what it's like to have to set up an event like that, you know, at the house too. You know, everybody just has this normal internet set up, but whenever you have you need some serious bandwidth to be able to pull off what you guys did. And you know, what you guys did was essentially similar to the Team Story Cups, you know, and the you know, Buy Game House and all that kind of thing. So that was really, really cool. That feel was totally there, and you guys even had your own flavor, which was awesome. I guess just the last few questions. I guess, what are there any things that you want to change? Like, just off the top of your head, like right now, that from the standpoint of format or any big things structurally to the tournament.
Right, I think the best of 11 team conquest format is very close to being, you know, optimal. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of testing before the league started, and that's why I put the bench rule in, because like, you know, otherwise somebody can just like send the mm-hmm. same person six times and they lose, and then the other guys can't even play, right? So there was a little bit of testing. I think overall it's okay. It might be very confusing to viewers to see like what's happening during the phase 1 and phase 2, like, and why that matters. So we're going to improve on the visuals or like the brackets, communicate a bit more of like what's actually happening in the point system, because players obviously understand it, but then it's for the viewers and like, especially the people that are not in the Hearthstone scene, right? It's like extra barrier. They need to like actually know what's happening in Hearthstone game and know what the bracket is. So that can be improved.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's really the top two out of my head. The other one was, we actually wanted to do a open qualifier for the first one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But then we scrapped that because, you know, like open qualifiers. Okay, so if every team is going to join the open qualifier, it's going to be huge. And
yeah.
Extra manpower on our part. And then if we don't let it be open and we just choose like four teams to be the open qualifier, then people are going to complain that it's not actually an open qualifier. And then it ended up being too much work. So then maybe next season, you know.
Yeah. No, that's cool. You have at least you want to have an open element to it. Is it going to be the same number of teams?
Everything is down to change.
Yeah.
But
okay, cool.
Hillam, you know, at least, or Life Coach, Tice, and RDU, mm-hmm. they're invited, obviously.
Yeah.
If they do, like, an all-open kind of qualifier thing, like 12 teams, for example, seeding to 8, then even Cloud9 would have to play in that bracket, because, I mean, well, they did it with the whole thing, so.
Yeah, okay.
Have to do that.
So perks of being the champ, Tice. That's nice.
Right, Firebat? Perks of being champion?
No, you don't get any perks of being champion for BlizzCon.
That's
just
true.
Like,
that's
have
true.
Fun qualifying again, buddy.
Yeah, they should have invited you directly. I think that would have been,
Yeah, that would have been nice, yeah. It
makes a better story when I qualify back.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, speaking of storylines, I think the ATLC did a, you know, they made a lot of storylines, right? Dog being always unlucky. Mm-hmm. Life Coach, you know, in the Redemption, he was like, what? He lost 5 games or something like that.
Oh, right? Yeah, exactly.
My favorite thing that came out of storyline-related stuff is all the gifs about Life Coach's face.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on, dude.
Making, yeah.
That was classic, right?
Yeah, that was the best. Yeah.
I've never seen such intense looks like from a player consistently throughout an entire event.
Didn't see a 6-0 ever in the tournament, which is kind of surprising. I expected at
least
to be like that. But we did see a triple bench from Temple Storm, so that was good too. I love when people get benched, you know. In the ATLC, I was like, you know,
you were always happy when somebody was so down after losing 2 games. You were the only happy person.
I love when people get benched. That's just hilarious.
Dude. Well, the cameraman was ready to go. I mean, you were always there next to the bench with, like, you know, whatever sign you had there. But yeah, the cameraman was always really, really great to follow the players. It was like the walk of shame, basically walking down the stairs to the bench. But yeah, anyways, I just want to congratulate you on a successful, you know, successful league. It's it's really, really hard to pull off something, you know, that big and just from the scope of things, right? And, you know, you were the guy behind it also, Ma. So anyways, congratulations. And Tice, of course, congratulations to you for being part of the winning team. So next topic I want to talk about is BlizzCon qualifiers. You kind of mentioned it. That's kind of like in full swing right now. It actually started like a week ago or so, but you know, ATL kind of took a lot of the ATLC took a lot of the attention away from it. But now it's kind of the main thing going on now, and we're kind of refocusing on the BlizzCon World Championships now. But my first question to you guys is, do you think that this year there's been less attention on just what's supposed to be the main storyline for the Hearthstone community? Anybody, jump in.
I think it's about the same as what it was like last year at this point. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't really get like all the full swing and attention until we actually start seeing like the decider matches of who's actually going to the regionals, because we're at the qualifiers to regionals right now. Right. So like we're at just the very beginning of the road. So it's just down the ladder portion, and now people have to qualify to regionals, then they have to play regionals to then qualify for BlizzCon. So there's still a lot of steps ahead and a lot of room for a following and a story to really be built.
Yeah. I mean, I'm comparing to last year when people had to fight through the 7 rounds with or something like that. Like, people had to go like 5-0, 6-1, or 7-2 in effectively a triple elimination bracket, right? Mm-hmm. And when that happened, there wasn't a lot of things that were, you know, luckily announced or like promoted or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's perfectly fine. And the thing is, like, it's really hard to promote like, what, 160 players right now?
Yeah.
It's like 4 regions of like 40 people each. That's like really difficult to do. So when it comes down to like 8 players in each region after the best the round of 40, Blizzard will do something. And I think it's going to be hype. It's just like the build up, right?
Yeah, I think they're doing a good job right now, though. Mm-hmm. Like, even just, they're showing like almost every match in the 40 round qualifier. Like, they're really giving like the spotlight to the people that have made it to just this far. So I think it's really good.
Yeah, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of it. In fact, you guys are going to be playing today.
And
it's going to be aired too, of course, right? Like, let me show you the brackets really quickly here. You can see the brackets here. And who are you guys playing? I know, Maj, you're playing Hot Form, right? I think I saw that.
Yeah, I'm playing VLPS.
Oh, VLPS, okay. Yeah, so a lot of big names still in this tournament, and there's this is just the winner's bracket, right? And then or the upper bracket, and then there's lower bracket down here, too.
All 8 matches today are going to be the upper bracket.
Oh, they're going to be all be streamed today?
Yeah, all 8 brackets, all winners are going to be there. I think they're going to go live in, like, an hour and a half or something like that. And, of course, they're, like, rotating around community channels for this one, so I'm not really sure which is exactly the next one. But, yeah, you can just catch it on, just, you know, watch or go on Twitch. It's probably the first or the second most highest viewers watch, so you can check it out there.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be the most popular stream, I'm sure, for Hearthstone. But it's cool that they're spreading it out, like, different streams each time. That's really cool. And different casters, too, each time.
Yeah,
which is nice, and that's good for the community or Blizzard to really be supporting the community that way.
I mean, esports is kind of new for Blizzard, right?
Not really, right? StarCraft, it's been around forever.
Right. But the Hearthstone, the direction was more of like casual, laid back, down and play it. So it's good to see them. They're like incorporating these gradually, so it's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck to you guys today. Hopefully you guys, we'll see you in, I think once you get past all of this, right, then you guys go to San Francisco, probably the studio, right, and shoot the, like that, right? There's actually even cash prize at that point, right? Like, you're guaranteed something at that point.
If you win there, you're guaranteed to be top 16 at BlizzCon, so you're guaranteed like $5,000, I think.
Right, just making it to the next stage, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, winning out at San Francisco.
Oh, winning out. So you have to win at San Francisco to be guaranteed something.
Otherwise, you're not getting any money.
I think you do. For the EU regionals, you get already if you make top 8. Top 8 will be played in Prague, and then if you get already top 8, you at least have something already, I think.
Oh, okay.
But last I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, last year you didn't get anything unless you're actually going to BlizzCon.
I know, that was pretty rough. There's only, how many of you guys? 4 of you guys that went to BlizzCon?
Yeah,
That's, 4. Yeah, that was pretty rough. Tice, when is your qualifier?
It is all going to be decided this weekend. It starts tomorrow, Friday, and at Sunday we know the 8 people that are going to go to Prague. And in AU they are going to do it all spread over these 3 days. And I had to play in the top 40, and I won my 2 games, so I'm in the top 60 now, and now I have to play against 6-0 that already was in that spot. So that's tomorrow.
Wow, you're playing 6-0. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to Card Talk. I know a lot of you guys watching Valley Town always are looking forward to this segment of the show. And we're going to start off with that same segment that we had last week, which was Golden Good or Gimmick. Actually, I added the good part because one of the fans suggested it in the YouTube comments, and it's actually a good idea. So we actually have an added label that we can have for the cards, which is good, which is kind of in between Golden and Gimmick. Golden being a great card that you think will stick around a while, and Gimmick being just, you know, a faddish card, or a card that's going to be gone very, very quickly here. And what we do is we go through just a few cards that I've picked out and have the three guys kind of discuss them or give us their classifications and hopefully debate them a little bit if I picked some good cards here. But I'm going to start with you, Maz. And our first card we're going to talk about is Frost Giant. Mm-hmm. I want to get your thoughts on this. Golden, good, or gimmick?
Okay, so when I first looked at the card, I thought it was like just pretty bad. Because like you have to like wrap up how many hero powers for it to be playable. You compare it to like Mountain Giant and Hanlock, you know, compared to like the other giants like Sea Giant, right? Doesn't seem to fit a lot because using a hero power is like at least before GTT, right? Using a hero power is like a bad thing because you missed a drop or something. It's like a compensation for your two mana, if anything. So it's really hard to purposely compensate your turn and not play any cards and then wrap this up, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was pretty bad. And when it released, it's to be expected. Nobody really played this Frost Giant. Some people think that it's good in Hanlock, but then you realize that, you know, you can just play Mountain Giant instead and you only tap God knows how many times. The other deck that people are thinking about putting in is the Duplicates Mage, mm-hmm. where, you know, they usually just echo their giants a lot, and then you know, play a lot of Sun Furies and echo them again, do it again. But in that thing is, well, you know, you kind of still want to establish cards like Mad Scientist and Belchers, and even play your Secrets if you draw them, right? So it seems like it's really, really difficult to play this correctly, so I would say that this is a gimmick card.
Yeah, I think the card's pretty good.
All right.
I mean, like, if you're playing, like, Echo Mage, you can get its cost reduced down without having to rely on your health total, and then you can just, like, echo it infinite amount of times and continue replaying it in the same turns. So you can do, like, big double Echo setup turns. Not that Echo Mage is, like, the greatest of decks, but it, like, totally makes that archetype of deck much more viable. You actually have persistent threats throughout the game that don't rely on your opponent attacking you, so you can get your Moltens down. So you can actually have some control over the game a little bit if it goes control on control.
Yeah. I still think Moltons always make a bigger swing. Even in Hanlock in the Echo deck, the Moltons can just swing the game totally around. And the Frost Giant, it takes a lot of time before you can play them. I can see it being good in slow decks, but sometimes they just feel really too slow. I don't think you can ever play, like, I think you will always play one. I don't think you can play two of them, or how do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely a one-of, but one-of is much better than gimmick. One-of is good.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not really sure. It's one of these cards where it double dips, right? Like, it's better to run two, in my opinion, because, like, when you run two, you can actually play two Frost Giants in one turn. I can't compare it to, like, you know, the, mm-hmm. what's that called? The
Sea Giant? Or no?
No, the Druid card that's, like, the nine mana. The fire tree, you know?
Yeah, but
whenever a minion dies that turn, it costs one less, right? So, like, in Tides' deck, you play two of them because you Poison Seas, Starfall, and everything dies, and you slam two of them, right? There's a lot of cards that kind of, like, get better when you run multiple copies of that. I guess the best example of cards that aren't good like that is, like, Shadow of Death in Arena, because you pick the first one is really good. And then the more you pick, the worse it becomes, right? But, like, Frost Giant and, like, you know, Volcanic Drakes and stuff like that, it's better the more you pick it.
Yeah, but how many, matchups is the card actually good in is what you got to consider as well. Because, like, it's a greedy card that's going to be pretty useless in a lot of matchups, but the matchups it's good in, it's really good in. So that's why I think you can justify doing it as a one-of, because against aggro, you're never going to be able to play that at all. It's just going to kill you. Then against, like, heavy control that tries to control your life total so you can't do the Molten Swings with the Frost Giant's Mage, then you're going to be able to use it very effectively. Mm-hmm. But Ladder's just pure cancer.
Yeah, that's very, very true. So what classes make the most sense? Obviously, you mentioned Mage, right? Are there any, and possibly Warlock, any other classes make any sense? Or hero power enough for this thing
priest.
To...
Yeah, priests can do it sometimes with, like, super control priests with, like, healings and light bombs and stuff. I ran a Frost Giants priest for a while and got like top 100 legend with it.
Wow. But,
was there only 100 legends that time?
No, it was at the end of last season.
Okay.
I was just kind of throwing around with it. Yeah. I mean, like, it ran double Frost Giant, too, but, like, just, like, light bombs and things to clear, and then you just hero power a lot, and then, like, Justicar. So a lot of the game was just, like, Justicar, heal myself a lot, kill your board, keep healing myself, then two Frost Giants.
That's the best way to use Justicar.
If anything, yeah, Frost Giant decks would run two. I don't think one Frost Giant makes a lot of sense. It's, like, deviating from the game plan, yeah.
Okay, so Amaz, gimmick, Farbat, golden or good?
Just good. Just good? Not golden.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely not golden.
Good entice?
I think he's gimmick. He might be okay in some situations, but gimmick overall.
Okay. Next card we're going to talk about, and since we have our resident druid expert here, Tice, I'm going to have you lead this off. So Mulch.
Mulch. Yeah, that was the card I was so exciting about when he came out. I thought like, oh yeah, there's the removal for the druid, and I have to say I tried him a bit, not enough to really say how good he is, but if there was not a Death Rattle meta where every minion has like a Death Rattle, this card will be really good, but I found it really hard to put him off in some situations. I look at it like a set that's like kind of what he does by giving your opponent a card, and normally you give an opponent a card that is kind of a bit more expensive than cards should normally be. I can see him being okay to good, but he's just not worth it for me yet to play in the druid. If I could put in some more of the cards in a druid deck, I would probably try it out, one of it. But yeah, I just cannot really find a spot for him really in the druid deck, just because the meta is not made for it with a lot of Death Rattle kind of minions.
Yeah, I mean, in Hearthstone, like, it's really bad for you to ever play a minion that has no effect on the board immediately or effect when it dies, because it's so vulnerable to these hard removals. Like, that's why Assassinate, for example, is, like, a terrible card, because it would be great if everyone's playing Boulder Fist Ogre, but nobody's playing any vanilla drops that don't either have a Death Rattle or a Battle Cry, which then makes sapping it. They've already gained something out of it when you go to mulch it.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, mulch, when you... All the Death Rattle business is really awkward, right? But even when you're facing not Death Rattle minions, like, for example, Emperor, right? If your druid plays Emperor and you mulch it, then your opponent doesn't... It maybe get it, like, a small drop instead, and they can actually have more options. Whereas if you sap an Emperor, they maybe cannot play the Emperor again because they need to deal with your board immediately, right? So sometimes a random card is better than the card that gets returned to their hand. So, it's really awkward.
There is one matchup where it is really good, and that is against Handlock, for example. I tried it once, and I had it against Handlock, and I just killed a giant, I gave him a crappy card, and he discarded a card. So, yeah, it's just also, a lot of times, BGH is more than fine in Druid. The targets that you, except from Emperor, the targets that you want to just destroy, get already destroyed by BGH a lot of times, and then you have at least a 4-2 body. This card doesn't have a 4-2 body, and it even gives your opponent a card. So if your opponent doesn't draw that much, a lot of cases the BGH is better.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so a triple gimmick here for Mulch.
Yeah.
All right, next up we got... I know, right? Okay, next up we got Lock and Load. And Fireback, I'm going to have you lead off here. Trump actually mentioned, I think last week, that he was surprised that no Lock and Load decks have really become viable quite yet. What do you think of this card?
Well, if it was good, then there'd have to be a deck around it already created, because literally everyone in Hearthstone, as soon as that card came out, was trying to make a deck viable with that.
Yeah.
And there is still no deck viable that's a Lock and Load Hunter, so what I have to say, just based on that alone, like, without even going into the card too much, just the amount of people I know trying it, and nobody having success with it, it has to be gimmick.
At least for now, right? I think maybe in the future if they added more spells, but...
Maybe.
I don't know. The Hunter's game plan right now is to play a card that's either a minion or, like, play a card that's direct damage after, like, late game or something like that, right? You never put it to late game. Like, mid-game, you want to kill your opponent. And Lock and Load is kind of comparable to, like, Arcane Elect, where you're just drawing cards, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where it's from. It's just you're drawing cards. So why do you want to draw cards as a hunter when you can play a minion with charge, or weapons that go face? It doesn't make sense. I think it's never going to be played, even if there's something insane. For example, like, there's a zero mana spell that deals 3 damage to the face, or something ridiculous like that, right? Why would you still play this card? You would just play 2 of those and just play everything else. This is also one of the cards that is funny because it's better as a double, right? Like, if you can't, you're never going to play 1 lock and load, you're going to play 2, because if you double lock and load, you get, like, double dip, right? So it's always the double dip value that you're looking for, but yeah, this card is just really bad. Yeah.
I have seen some, like, fun decks with, like, King's Elec, Malagos, right, and Emperor, and those are the only minions you run, and everything else is lock and load and spells, so then you can King's Elec into the Emperor, and then King's Elec into the Malagos.
It's like an Ancestor's Call type of deck, yeah. Tice?
Yeah, I think just the issue is that it doesn't fit in the Hunter. I think if this card will be in, like, a rope, it will be so broken. It's just not a card that fits Hunter in any way. I think in a lot of classes this card will be playable, but in Hunter it just totally goes against their strategy. I don't see it really working.
Yeah, the hero power kind of dictates the Hunter so much, and it's like you almost have to play defensive spells with this for it to actually, you know, like the Hunter's Marks and things like that, right? So okay, lock and load looks like another triple gimmick there. Next up, we got Justicar, Amaz. This card, we've been seeing some, you know, just more in the control kind of decks, but what's your thoughts?
When Justicar first came out, I was really excited about it because, you know, it's something that modifies the game completely, right? If you play this card, your game plan kind of shifts to where you want to use your hero power a lot, right? For example, like if you're playing Warrior, you would play this, and you have to at least click your hero power 3 times for it to be better than the Shield Maiden, right? Because their stats are pretty much comparable. A lot of people think that 3 health is really abysmal, but, you know, it's at times abysmal. It dies to Dark Bomb and whatnot, but I still think it's, like, really, it's like a bonus thing, right? It's more like a 6 mana change of hero power. Oh, by the way, here's a minion as well, right? So, yeah, I think it's really good in specific decks. There are some decks that this is not good in, like, for example, Hunter, where it doesn't even get a double effect. You know, Druid, for example, you don't really want a hero power anyways. But then there are some decks that the improved hero power could make a big deal. Like, for example, Priest, Warrior. I actually think the Shaman was good at first. Multiple spell power totems, but then no, you just actually don't get any. You can just RNG and get a spell power totem anyways, right? So Priest, Warrior, and I think Paladin.
Paladin.
Last one that's really, really good. 2/1/1s is actually pretty threatening.
Yeah, the Shaman 2 totems, actually, I think would have been better in the end if you could just get 2 of them.
Yeah, maybe, but then if you have 3 totems, you actually can't push the hero power.
Yeah,
right?
It's true. it's kind of weird. Yeah, obviously, a weird scenario like that would occur.
Shaman hero power is always the weirdest one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this card is good.
Okay. Yeah,
it's really good with the Priest and the Warrior hero powers that are to you, too. Like, upping those up to 4, just being able to live forever is, like, really, really good. Just outlast your opponent, play the value game that you're trying to play anyway, and then with Priest, you can combine it with things like Alcanai, start pinging things off for lots of damage, and Warrior can combine that with Shield Slam, but just the hero powers that already influence for 2, and then getting upgraded influence for 4 is way better than the upgrades on the other ones, because they just start out better. Like, 2 is bigger than 1, and then 2 doubled is better than the improvements on 1. It's just as simple as that.
Far bad breaking out of Moz Mat there.
It's important to stake these things out. A lot of people don't realize that sometimes 1 is less than 2, and sometimes 1 equals 3, for example.
Right. Tice?
Yeah, I like this card. It really improves the more control-based classes and the control-based decks, and it is sometimes considered being a bit slow, and that is kind of true, but if you just play in just the car, you can already cut like 1 or 2 big drops, because it makes the game so much slower. So yeah, I really like this card. I hope if the meta will ever go a bit slower than as it is now, this card will be maybe we will even see it in it will be more popular in Paladins or in Shamans, and I like this card. I hope it's probably a card that people will always consider putting in or putting out of their control decks.
Yeah, I mean, I think this card's pretty cool too. As the designers, this like you guys said, right? It seems to only be viable for certain classes. I wonder if they'll be able to tweak it a little bit so that it's actually viable in all classes.
I can see it being viable in Druid too. I mean, getting an hero power for two, armoring up for two, it is because you upgrade both of your things. So this it can be okay for Druid too. It's pretty close, maybe, but yeah, it just doesn't maybe fit the strategy of the mid range. But maybe in a ramp Druid deck, it might fit really well. It's just a bit slow now. Yeah,
I think it's okay for cards to not work in every single deck, right? You know, things that like. Very obvious, you know, like this one, for example, like warlocks kind of get got Giants. The worst thing. It's like, why do you want to like not hurt yourself?
right.
But then like stuff like Mountain Giant, for example, like you know, those are inherently just better for some classes.
Yeah.
You can also like Silverhand Regen, right? Where you know the 1/1 is obviously better for the Paladin for a flood deck and whatnot. I think these cards are fine because in Arena it actually makes it more interesting. To go like, okay, I'm playing a something that this is bad in, a shaman, for example, right? And this comes up versus something else, and that becomes interesting, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think cards don't need to be, like, super good. Like, neutral cards don't need to be super good. But Patron, I wish it was more viable and more classes than just, like, Warrior, and maybe, like, the Mage Ping in Arena.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, triple good here? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's only viable in, like, I'd say two classes right now, so I wouldn't give it golden, so I'd just settle with good.
Okay. All right, let's move on to... Let's see, what do we have here? Okay, Garrison Commander. Tice, we'll have you start off here. So Garrison Commander is kind of one of those cards that allows you to cast your hero power twice, right, in a turn. And when we first were taking a look at the cards for the first time, like Imaji kind of showing it off, right, at the preview and things, everybody had these great thoughts about, you know, just hero powers, right, all these changes to the hero powers, but we haven't really seen much of it. What are your thoughts on this card, Typh?
Yeah, when I saw this card coming out, I was kind of a bit hyped because it really looked like they want to do something big with the Inspire. The Inspire thing. If you can combine it with a really good Inspire card, this card has the potential to be broken because it has 2 mana, 2/3 stats. It's not bad at all. But the problem at the moment is that the Inspire effect is really hard to put out of early, and there are not really much cards that abuse it. And there is the one card that we have now. I forgot the name, but the 3 mana 2/2 where you can just save your hero power a turn.
Offensive coach.
And like together with that card, it has the potential to be strong. But then still, the problem is you need a good Inspire card that is just totally winning you the matchup at some point. If you play it and you hero power twice, that is the card and it wins you. And at the moment, I don't really feel that the Inspire cards are, besides being really good value, they are not insanely winning you the game, and I think that is the problem at the moment with this card, the Garrison Commander, but also with the Fenshin Coach.
Yeah, there are a few solid Inspire cards, those with like Murloc Knights Insane like
Confessor
Priest Legendary. Yeah.
I saw this card being played in some funny Inspire Paladin decks. I think it has a place there. It has some more good combos just with a Quartermaster, for example. Getting free dudes for two. It's,
I mean, with Justicar and Paladin, it can pull off some pretty sweet stuff, too.
Yeah. You can play, like, Muckless Champion, things like that, and buff them all.
It's generally just, like, too slow, because it's like, I could play all of these minions to make this Inspire card work, or I could just play a solid minion and just throw a Piloted Shredder out there.
Yeah, that is just the biggest problem at the moment. There's no card that abuses it really hard.
Yeah, I've seen Garrison Commander used, though, for the non-combo sort of things. It's just thrown in over Armorsmith in Control Warrior before, which didn't seem terrible. Some guy got pretty high on the ladder with that, because you get the armor effects instantly without having to, like, hit your Armorsmith so that you can just shield slam easily. But, yeah, that sort of fell out of popularity, but it was an idea somebody had.
Still works with War Song, too. not quite as well as Armorsmith, of course, but
yeah, it was in like a Control Warrior that doesn't have the whirlwinds and stuff,
right? Amaz, what do you think?
Oh, I think this card is just bad because like for it to if you want to use it immediately after you play it, it's probably more of a 4 mana 2/3 that activates your Inspire minions, right? If you want to drop it down, it doesn't have the threat that a 2-drop might, you know, give you. For example, like Mad Sciences, Knife Juggler, Haunted Creeper, you know, those cards are kind of compared to this one. So I think it's just bad in Constructed. In Arena, it might be pretty good, right, if you're top-decking cards where, you know, Arenas sometimes get to that point. 2 Hero Powers might actually make the difference, you know, summon 2-1-1, summon 2 Totems, ping 2 times, and stuff like that. It could work out in Arena. And the stat line is also, you're not, like, giving a penalty for it, right? For example, like, Pisces Summoner, you're actually having a penalty for that effect, and this is just, like, you know, the stat line is right. But I can't see this using in Constructed.
Okay, let's move on to a Hunter card here, Hunter Legendary, Firebat, Acid Maw.
Oh.
So this card actually, when you get it sometimes, it's like unexpectedly, it sets up some funny situations, yeah. But planned, constructed decks, is there anything here for this card?
I don't think so. I think it's too slow. 7 mana, right? Mm. 7 mana, 4/2. It's like, come on, man. It's so expensive, and for what it does, you have to be behind as a hunter on 10 mana. And if you're behind as a hunter on 10 mana, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to be hitting him in the face and killing him at that point. That's how your deck works. I don't think there's enough cards that support what this card's trying to do. It's one of those kind of like lock and load situations where it's like, maybe in the future if there's more things supporting that style of Hunter game plan, but right now there's just not enough support that goes with what this card tries to accomplish, which is recovering board states at 10 mana with Hunter.
Unheard of from Hunter, right?
Just not a Hunter card.
Yeah. But you can get it off, what's that card? The new, the 5 mana 3/3 summon a random beast?
Yeah, the Ram Wrangler.
You play Ram Wrangler when you're ahead, right? And you're like, wow, this is great, I'm ahead, I'm winning, I'm setting up lethal here, whatever. And then you get that out of it, and then they swipe your board or whatever, and everything's dead.
Yeah.
That sums it up. Amos, same sentiments?
Yeah, pretty much. You're only going to see this in Constructed play off Warp Spinner. I mean, that's the only way that this
and
is...
And Ram Wrangler.
And Wrangler, yeah.
And I guess the best... The dream situation would be like you get it off West Spinner, your opponent plays like, I don't know, like a big creature, like a Chillmaw or something, and then you can like play this trade, and then I guess that does work. Maybe a Dr. Broom or something. You know, that's like the extent to it. You're not going to put this in your deck.
Yeah.
You're not going to play from behind. Hunters want to kill your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
If this worked on the face, then I guess Hunters...
Yes.
That'd be a little bit too powerful. Very, very powerful. Tice.
Yeah, it's as I already said, it just totally doesn't fit the Hunter general strategy. I would like to have a card being this viable, and maybe in the future these slower cards, these control cards, might fit in the Hunter deck. But at the end, there's still that Hero Power. There are still these aggressive cards in the Hunter deck. Also, it's kind of funny if you get it off from Wrangler with an Unleash. That makes the combo a bit cheaper for on 8 mana. But yeah. Otherwise, I cannot really see it being good enough for Constructed at all.
And that kind of sums up the Hunter's new cards. They don't seem to quite match up with the current strategy for Hunters.
Hunter has another plan. They like.
Yeah, I think they're like slowly trying to develop up some type of plan for Hunter.
Yeah.
All right.
This Hunter Legendary is kind of like a bonus one, right? Every class got one Legendary in TET, and Hunter got two because of like the
Dread Scale.
Dread Scale kind of theme, right? So it's okay for that one to be bad.
That's the dream Legendary, right? Getting both of those, and then Dread Scale just clears the board.
No, Acid Maw takes one damage. It's not even
dying. Yeah, but it doesn't die, at least. Okay, last one we have is Shaman Legendary. Which the Mistcaller, a lot of people thought was going to get be crazy value just because it gives you +1/+1 to everything that hasn't been played yet, but haven't seen it much. Maz, what do you think?
Oh, I think this is this was really cool when I first saw it because they're actually interacting with cards that are in their hand, they're answering the cards in the deck and whatnot. But then I thought it was going to be really bad because like 6 mana, you need to play a 4/4. And this needs to like at least activate 3 times for it to be like kind of like better than Boldfist Ogre, for example, right? And then you go like, okay, so my Fire Elementals can be BGH now. Why do I like want +1/+1 so badly on my minions? You get what I mean? Like, like Belcher becomes like a 4/6, but the slime doesn't even get buffed. Your totems that your Hero Power summons doesn't even get buffed. So, I don't know. I think it's just pretty bad. I tried it a lot when it first came out. Like, the shaman told him that everybody was trying that out. Mm-hmm. You're throwing this in, and it's like, eh, not really that good. The plus one is not really that relevant.
Tice?
Yeah, I don't want to say this card is really that bad already. I think when I first saw this card, I thought it will actually be one of the better side of the expansion. Of course, then I realized after a week the ladder goes back to what it was. Nobody's playing these new cards and everything goes so much more aggressive again. But I would love to see this card being a bit more played. That's for sure potential. But yeah, people are not really trying out the more slower shaman decks at the moment. I still think it has some potential, especially with the new card, with the Healing Wave, together with that, for example. If you make like a really slow shaman deck, it might work in some way. It's a hard card to make a deck around. If you play this card, you want to probably make your deck around it a bit too, but I still see some potential. I don't want to just throw it away and say this card is bad. I see some potential still, but yeah, not sure yet how you have to make the deck around it.
Yeah, you lose a lot of tempo when you actually play the card, so that makes making a tempo sort of plan with lots of minions pretty hard. So then you got to try and make like a control deck that can recover that tempo, mm-hmm. which then uses a bunch of removal spells. So the amount of value you're getting off that card's reduced because you're playing more spells now. And then at the same time, when you're playing a lot of removal and you're playing a control deck, you're playing big minions anyway. So then why do you need to give your big minions +1/+1? Like, Dr. Boom with +1/+1 is still Dr. Boom. Like, it doesn't help it as much as, like, it just feels like it's in an awkward spot where you want to put it in a tempo deck that has lots of mid-range minions that you can tempo out with and the +1/+1 is actually relevant, but you have to put it in a control deck because of the tempo loss you get when you play it. And then the Ragnaros as a 9/9 isn't good. So, like, it doesn't really help your big bombs accomplish anything more than just the big bomb's going to accomplish on its own.
Right.
This okay. really should have just buffed Hero Power, to be honest. I think it's fine to have, like, a strong card for Shaman. It's fine.
You only... Oh, you mean make all the totems 1/1 or
yeah.
+1/+1?
Well,
oh, okay.
+1/+1.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to have strong cards. I mean, like, if you look back, all of these strong legendaries are from the classic set, right? You got Sylvanas, you got your Ragnaros, you got Tyrians and Alakirs. You know, those are the strong cards. I guess they're really afraid of making like a new set of like a very, very strong card or something like that. Because then, you know, you have power creep thing. You know, every set is just going to be stronger than the last. Mm-hmm. And people are going to go like, oh, I have to get the set to, you know, stay relevant or whatnot. But still, this card is just like not good. So
you know, they have like, so many unique legendaries and unique cards with this set, and it's I feel like it's kind of something like the dragon thing where they released all the dragons originally, and then the dragons were all like everyone tried them out, and they were like, "Wow, this sucks." And then this set comes out now with just that the title guardian or whatever it is, Twilight Guardian,
yeah,
and starts bringing the dragons together, and there's the new dragon legendaries now. Dragons are actually good now. They're playable. Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe in the future, the next set's going to incorporate some of these weird, unique legendaries that no one can figure out where they're supposed to be put yet, and then the next set comes out, and bam, they all suddenly have a place to go.
It's still pretty weird. Everyone was so hyped about Shaman. Everyone thought, like, oh, Shaman is going to be one of the better classes now. They get the Tuskar, they have this card, they have even the... The cheap, the 3/4 golem totem, and it was like, the shaman has to be strong now. And at the end, it still seems like one of the weaker classes. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, when you compare it to other classes which already do this, like totem golem, I think when I reviewed it, I thought it was like one of the most overhyped card ever. It's like you just came one turn earlier. Like druids already do that with Innervate, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's generally I think the issue with shaman, right? The overload. I think the overload mechanic, which is supposed to give them a lead, right, by being able to play it early, doesn't seem to work out that way. Just because removal cards are so cheap in all the other classes.
Well, more like overload cards are budgeted too high, you know? Like, the overload is... They feel like you're jumping the curve, right? So it should be a little bit weaker. So, for example, like Lava Burst, this is the prime example, right? 3+2 is 5 and deals 5 damage compared to, like, other stuff, like Fireball, obviously. Mm-hmm. They really overvalue overload, I think.
Yeah.
All right. So All right. So two gimmicks, and I guess Tice in between a gold gimmick or good gimmick type of.
Yeah. Thing. At the moment, he is probably gimmick, but I can see him being good really fast too. If somebody just tries him out and finds a really good list around it, it might be good to be playable, but yeah, at the moment he's just not strong enough. It's just not good in this meta against all the aggro, a lot of combo decks being played. This card is just not working against that.
Okay, I think that concludes our card discussion there. Let's move on to some deck talk here. And I just picked two decks that I saw on Hearthpwn that might be interesting to talk about. The first one being Zetalot's deck. That's it's a priest deck that he got quite high on, I think, this past week. And, you know, lots of elements of this is very similar to priest that you've seen. But I'll name a couple things and maybe we can discuss it. So the biggest thing is Holy Champions in this deck, which you don't see in very many of the priest decks being played, whether it's Dragon or it's Control. So what do you guys think of this deck?
Seems really solid. It's got like the standard Control Priest shell, a little bit greedier, and then it's got the Holy Champions thrown in there as like extra mid-game presence. And I mean, Holy Champions got a solid stat line, like 3-5 isn't bad, and then it's got the Light Warden effect. So if it sticks around, you can set up some OTKs with like Wild Pyromancers and Circles.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so always the possibility for that makes it pretty strong.
Amaz, our Priest expert here.
Yeah, the Holy Champion is like the signature card in this deck. You know, we see that all the time. You have like this Light Warden, you know, OTK thing. Mm-hmm. The champion with a 5 health is actually pretty sturdy. You know, I kind of always joke about the 3-4-5 rule, where if a minion has like 3 or less health, is really bad. 4 health is really good, and 5 health or more is insane. It doesn't really matter. 5 upwards is kind of the same. But yeah, it does fulfill that requirement, and yeah, it does kind of fit in this deck, right? Because you're still running the Pyromancers, the Circles, and whatnot, mm-hmm. so it's OTK. That's one of the game plans, like one of the win conditions of this deck. The other win condition is like the Justicar, right? So you have Justicar, you play a more control-heavy game, just stall it out, you use your Light Bomb to clear the board, and then hopefully your Ysera Confessor, you know, kind of like seals the deal up. And if that doesn't work, you always have Thought Steal as a backup.
Oh, yeah.
Every time you Thought Steal in a Priest deck, you always have a win condition. Thought Steal is a win condition, right? You just,
yeah.
Against the control, you Thought Steal Grommash 2 times, like I did the other day. It's like pretty, it's very easy to Thought Steal legendaries when your opponents play 7 of them, right?
So, it feels a bit weird to play it in this deck, to be honest. Priest deck that really plays his own game by getting value from all these Inspire cards a bit and trying to just stay on live the early game. And it feels like the Thought Steal doesn't fit with staying alive early game and playing your own game plan. But yeah, I can see like it can do miracles and you put an extra card in your deck. But it's a bit in this deck, it seems like a bit over needed.
I like Thought Steal in the deck. I mean, you have plenty of control early. He's got like the standard like North Shire package, and then he's got Zombie Chow thrown in there, and then he has Wild Pyromancers and 2 Light of the Narus to go with it. So he's got all the early game removal. He's got Light Bomb, Holy Nova, Alkanized Circles. Like mm-hmm. sometimes you also just need an extra spell to proc with Wild Pyromancer, and Thought Steal just fits in that slot pretty efficiently.
What do you think about Ysera and Confessor? Like, I usually see one or the other in priest decks, even control priest decks. That's pretty greedy.
I've been playing a bit of priest just now on stream, and Confessor is kind of like my new favorite. I don't know. It's really good when you summon something that's like relatively fair. Like Chromagus is kind of fair, you know. Sometimes mm-hmm. Basically a big minion like Chomol, for example. Those are fair legendaries, right? You have the unfair ones like Cho and like some I don't know. Those are suck. And then
Edwin,
Edwin, yeah.
And then the unfair ones, which is like I don't know, KT, Ragnaros, you know, Ysera, for example, as well. Those are unfair. But in a normal summon, they either have to choose to kill your Legendary or the Confessor. They usually can't kill both. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, really good. So I love the Confessor. And Ysera is just like, extra win condition, I guess. I'm personally using Mind Control right now mm-hmm. because like meta has slowed down. People have been bored of playing Patrons, like the Aggro Hunter and whatnot. And more so that this season doesn't contribute to BlizzCon points, but still, I mean, that's kind of what's happening. I like the Ysera. Ysera's fine.
Yeah, this deck's kind of weird. It's like has all the early game and like very limited on the mid game. Like we don't see any Belchers or anything like that there, and then it just jumps right to late game. So like the only mid game really is like the Holy Champion and injured Blademasters, because you don't want to just like tempo out Alkanize most of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty focused on just crushing the aggro and then beating the control and struggling against mid range decks. So I guess that's what it is, like more of a meta choice. And that's kind of how you have to build Priest, right? You can't counter everything with Priest, but you can counter one thing really good with Priest, usually, and sometimes two.
Yeah.
But not all three. Never.
It's become more flexible, which is nice. I mean, you can just, you know, you can tweak to different decks, like you're saying, based on what's going on. All right, let's talk about second deck here, which is a Hunter. By the way, all these decks got to, you know, top 50 legends, so that's why we're discussing them. They're not just any old decks. So those of you out there needing a deck, you can, you know, just try these decks out. All right, this Hunter deck. I think the biggest thing to point out is that there's a Tiger here, and I've been seeing the Tiger a little bit, you know, on ladder too. What do you guys think of this deck?
Personally, I've not had so much success with Bear Trap. I think it worked really good in the beginning when a lot of people had no idea what the card was, and its success rate's gone down a lot. And especially if you're grinding Legend Ladder at around like top 100, top 50, everyone's going to be like, oh, that guy plays Bear Trap. I remember him.
So, right.
The success rate of Bear Trap, I feel, goes down the longer you play the deck, and maybe you're at a point where everyone's forgotten about Bear Trap again, because I remember everyone played it for a week, and then everyone took it out. And then it's kind of like Snake Trap in that regard, is people keep shifting it in and out randomly when people start forgetting about it, because it has huge success if people don't expect it. Mm-hmm. But if they play around it, it is pretty bad.
It's I don't really get the point. Like, I can see you play Flare, but it really makes only one matchup really better. Like, it makes Paladin, of course, really insane, probably, if you get it off at turn 6, but against the Hunter, Mira doesn't even do much. Hunter plays really well around their own traps, and it's like a card that I think he just made this deck right at the moment that the Paladin, everyone was playing the Paladin Secrets. And using the Paladin, and I can see that being really good for against the Paladin deck, and it looks like a pretty standard mid-range Hunter. Yeah, it's pretty fun that he plays a lot of one-offs, like one Web Spinner, one Freezing, one Knife Juggler, one Houndmaster. It's a lot of one-offs, but I can see this deck being pretty consistent.
Yeah, the Tiger helps with the King's Elk too, but it looks like he cut like a Knife Juggler for the King's Elk, and Knife Juggler's too good, man. It's so much damage.
It is. It is.
And just like Knife Juggler Unleashed is one of the ways you can contest like Zooey sort of decks, like the Paladin and Mech Mage sort of things, Tempo Mages, like. It's your recovery mechanism in the mid-game that helps you beat down those aggro decks. So, I don't know. I would like to see a second Knife Juggler.
I would see this deck have no Flare as well. Flare is just... Like, even Flare's against Secrets Paladin, like, that's like one matchup out of nine, and then you have, like, and you draw it, and they need to play Secrets. There's so many ands and ifs and words. Just play a two-drop.
Well, I think we know they're going to play Secrets. They got, like, 10 of them. So that's... I don't think we need to count that as an and.
Whether you wait for the mysterious... Whether you wait for the five Secrets or not is really the question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Secrets.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to some questions from you guys, the audience. I had you guys post questions in the comments for the Value Town post on ChainMAV.tv. So we'll pick some of these out. But let me start with just a question from me real quick. What's your favorite card right now, guys, while I'm looking through these?
Unfester Piltris.
Yeah, you just got to mention that. Right. Yeah. It's hard to pick one, huh?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pretty cool ones. And what are we speaking in terms of, like, playability? Or
no,
just fun?
Whatever. Just your favorite card for fun or whatever. Just whatever you...
I like the mage one that lets you hero power as much as you want. I like trying to turn into Ragnaros and do that.
Caldera. Oh, yeah, the major demo.
The major demo.
Caldera thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's a blast.
That is really fun. Okay, so I got a question here from Ben Kolya Mansley. Ben Broad recently posted a video on power creep and the problems with introducing new content, mostly creating more of a barrier to entry for new players. What do you think is the best way to overcome this, and what systems could they put in place for new players? Amant, you got any ideas for this?
I guess I'll take it first. New players, they're going to generally get overwhelmed when new sets come out. When you first join Hearthstone, you know the vanilla set, and then you learn all the cards because the mechanics are super easy, right? Things do damage when you play it, and things die when you kill it. But now everything's crazy. So one of the ways would be, you know, just having a vanilla set only kind of format, and you can also extend it to limited formats where, for example, you know, this kind of ladder, you're only queuing into vanilla plus GBG, for example, and Naxxramas. Mm-hmm. And then in this ladder, well, all the formats are available, you know.
Yeah.
Then you can actually, you know, separate the crazy, I have so many mechanics to learn, and what the heck is Inspire, right, to like just the normal type. That's one way to do it.
It is a bit of a problem in every game, right? Every game is already going, when they are gonna be mm-hmm. long, it's at some moment there's always the problem, probably for new players, to either in a mobile or a card game, it's a problem in a lot where you're not really used to some of the possibilities, and yeah, it's kind of hard. I think the idea from Amaz is actually really good. I actually like it that there might be like, it doesn't even have to be much options, but 2-3 different ladder options, and it can already work out really well for new players.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Or they could just give all the cards away for free, and then everybody can have them all.
Yeah.
Never.
It's funny somehow. But yeah, also the topic on power creep, a lot of people complain that Evil Heckler and Ice Rager were power creeps, but I don't really agree. We're not at that stage yet where we're introducing a card that's strictly better. For example, like if they introduced Knife Juggler, then I would actually consider that as more of a power creep than, like, you know, Evil Heckler, because nobody plays Booty Bodyguard anyways, and nobody's going to play Evil Heckler anyways. So if you're introducing a new card that's, like, an improvement over an existing card, but nobody's going to play that card anyways, it's probably more of an arena card, right? It's not, like, changing.
But why don't they just buff these terrible cards to a bit less terrible? I mean,
yeah, they could do that, too.
They still have to exist for the randomness cards. Like, yeah, Sky Golem, Shredder, cards, those sort of things.
Exactly. That changes a little bit. With ovulators and whatnot, you kind of forget. I was like, oh, I'm supposed to get a Booty Bodyguard here, but oh, I guess it's gone now, right? So that's one of the things. And of course, it's okay to have card games that give you like bad cards to start out with, so you can actually identify which are bad cards, right? So for example, like, oh, I'm playing this deck and it puts Magma Rager in my deck, and they play a lot, it's like, oh, it just dies, so I guess I'll replace it with something new, right? So it's kind of like the introduction level. So I think those cards have a place, but then at the same time, why do I have Magma Rager and Ice Rager available draft in Arena at the same time? Like, if I'm at the point where I know the card's bad, why am I still offering an option to play it, you know? So I guess the only argument for them to be still in the game after the introduction is because of cards like Unstable Portal. You know, it makes the power level of Unstable Portal a little bit weaker than it's supposed to be.
I mean, if every card was good, then how would you know they're good?
That's true. You gotta have relativity, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Manual B, I think it's Vaku Manual B asks, guys, Savannah High Main is one of the best cards in the game. Do you think that should be a legendary card?
Nah.
Yeah, Hunter's not broken right now without it being a legendary, so yeah, it seems fine. True. Like, Hunter's probably not even top three classes right now. So,
I don't like Innervate, right? Innervate's not legendary because it's like the only thing that's holding Druid together. So,
yeah.
I kind of can see it that it has to be maybe a legendary if Hunter will be more strong, but people, like, there is no legendary that you play maybe besides Lotep and Hunter. It's you play Savannah Hyman 1 and Savannah Hyman 2 now. It's
it's good as kind of a cheap deck too, right? I mean, just kind of what we were talking about, even with the power creep issue and people not being able to afford all these new cards constantly.
I guess the another angle to that question was, like, if it's legendary, then you won't see this too much in Arena, right? But then it's not really a big deal in Arena anyways, I think. Yeah, it's fine. Doesn't matter. It's like an Ancient of War. I compare it to, like, power level of Ancient of War.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Firebat. What do you think is the top three strongest decks at the moment? Without ruining what you're going to be bringing to BlizzCon qualifiers.
All right, well, I think Patron Warrior is currently the strongest deck, and then following behind that, in terms of, like, just, like, overall strength, not just what the meta is, I would go with, like, Patron Warrior, Secrets Paladin, and Druid. Mm-hmm. Like, I think those are the three all-around strongest decks that can do well in any sort of meta. They just have the best matchups all around. And Patron Warrior, everyone knows that that's pretty busted. It has combos that allow it to, if it has enough time, it just wins, which means your opponent has to kill you, and then you have mechanisms to stop that. So it just automatically does well against half the decks in the meta, because half the decks aren't going to be rushing you down as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. So then Secrets Paladin, also really solid because it takes the initiative. It has things like early game minions, and then it has a big finisher at the end, like how mid-range Hunter used to be. You have the early game minions put on the pressure, and then the huge finisher at the end. Mm-hmm. Well, its huge finisher is much better than high main now. So it's got the best like mid-game pressure with the best finisher now. So it sort of took the mid-range Hunter spot in the meta. And then, what was the last thing I said? Druid? Druid's got, like, so much consistency now. Yeah. They used to have a lot of struggle against aggro because they had to run, like, zombie chows or whatever to compete with aggro. But now they have Darnassus Aspirant, which accomplishes their wild growthing and helps them deal with aggro. So their big weakness just sort of got patched, and they're really benefiting from just not dying instantly now to aggro.
Yeah. All right. And you guys, Maz and Taish, you guys agree with that? Those three decks?
Yeah, I think overall, as Firebat said, if you're not really looking at the meta, they are the three decks that are the most consistent themselves. You see Handlock being played a lot too, or Demon Lock decks, but that's more because everyone is playing Patron, so you already get one pretty nice matchup, and if you get one nice matchup out of three matchups, and you just have an average one, it's already worth playing the deck almost in any kind of conquest mode. So, I totally agree with Fibet that these are the three decks that, if you don't look too much at the meta, are the best.
Okay. Let's see. Next question. It comes from, I can't read that. I think it's in Russian, so I can't read this, the name of this one. But what cards would you add to make Rogue top tier again? So it says Pirates obviously does not work. Yeah, man, don't work.
I wish I knew. That would have been that'd be good knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I see people still playing the Oil Rogue, which, you know, isn't super bad. Like, I don't think Rogue's quite at the bottom right now, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, Rogue's mid tier, but if you want to make it top tier,
yeah,
like, whew, I've been struggling with that puzzle for a long time.
Well, these new cards, right? They're all
lock and load. What make it broken? I think.
Wow. Lock and load.
Lock and load. Put it in the wrong glass. Oh card. My gosh, yeah.
Auctioneer for two mana, yeah.
So is there any potential in the Beneath the Grounds and Anubarak type of thing?
It tried so hard.
Oh, I know, like right now, but maybe in the future. I mean, in the future, like two expansions from now. Is there any kind of potential you see in that?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of potential. Like, it's so much value if you can slow down the game enough, and you have big removals with Rogue already with the Blade Flurries. You have like all of these cards that can help you take it to fatigue. It's just not dying while taking it to fatigue is the hard part.
Yeah.
And generally, that's really hard when everybody's just trying to kill you by going face. Like the current meta.
I think the thing of the new Rogue cards is that Rogue was pretty good in GVG, I think, because, you know, there were a lot of other cards that introduced it, you know. And then if you're designing the game and you look at the perspective of, okay, I guess rogues are really good in this one specific deck or rogue, right? Then every time you play against a rogue, it's just going to be automatically that. So that's why I think that Blizzard went in that direction with, like, introducing the Pirates, is introducing the Beneath the Grounds and Nubarak and Poison Blade, you know, something like that. Because, like, if you treat as a class as only one dimension, it's like single dimensional, it's like kind of boring when you play against it and when you play with it as well, since like you don't have a lot of options. That's kind of, I think, why they introduced Patron too, right? Because before Patron, everybody was just playing Control Warrior, right? Every time you see Kyoba against Warrior, oh, I guess I can play really slow, I'll just keep the thought still and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of what the direction I think they're doing with Rogue. And somewhat with Druid. Druid, you know, Aviana, you know, helps out that ramp thing as well. Yeah.
And some Savage Combatant for the Savage stuff.
Yeah, so something like that.
Yeah, it just doesn't work yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, from a designer standpoint, just trying to seed some things. Like the perfect example is the dragon thing. You know, it took a couple releases for it to actually become viable. It might be the same deal here for Rogue. Yeah. But maybe. It'd be cool to see more Pirates. I mean, the Pirate decks, I have played are fun to play. It's just they're just not very viable at a high level. All right, let's see. Any more questions here? Otherwise, we'll call it a show. Let me see if there's one new one here. Let me see if it's a good one. Okay, last one. What tournament format do you see as being the best one? Whether it's out there already or one that we haven't seen quite yet. Because the one that we saw in ATLC obviously was fresh and new, was really, really cool. But, some other people still prefer Swiss type of things and formats we've seen in other TCGs.
Really odd question to answer. I think it's really healthy for Hearthstone in general to have sometimes different formats. There is always a different strategy coming in, and mm-hmm. everyone already find out what is just the best lineup for Conquest, and the changes that are being in are really small. People are just playing just the same patron deck, and there is like one card difference sometimes. I feel like just having... I really love that... the ETLC and Fire Game is that doing it too, that they just come up with some new formats sometimes. It makes a fresh change, and I think that should happen maybe a bit more often.
Yeah, I agree with Tice. Just any change is good change. Just like keep players on their toes, keep things happening, keep things different is really good, because we get to these points where it's stagnant and everyone's just bringing the same exact three decks. Like, I was casting the qualifiers for BlizzCon Regionals America yesterday, and everyone had Patron Warrior and Druid, like almost every player.
Yeah.
And then just a third deck that kind of either countered Druid, which would be like Tempo Mages most of the time, or the third deck countered Patron, and it would be Handlock. And that was it. That was the diversity of the lineups. So everyone had a plan, and their plan was Druid and Patron can't be countered that well and can win really good, so let's bring those, and then let's bring a third deck that beats either Druid or Patron.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate the other new formats that people come up with. For example, like very early on, there was like limited mana grinds, right? You can't put any epics or legendaries in your stuff like that.
Yeah.
And people kind of extended to like, the Geico Brawls, the Challenge Stones, stuff like that. It's interesting to tackle the game in another way, and formats are the way to do it. But if you were to say that, what competitive format is the best... ATLC format.
Yeah. And how do you think of the banning thing? Like, there was long time last season, we had always the best of five, and you called ban one with the last year standing. Like, how is that? I'm actually kind of big of a fan of just banning one class, maybe. It might be a bit broken somehow, but how do you guys think of that?
I love banning. Banning is the best, man. It just adds another dimension and another just... thing that everyone has to think about, and a lot of people don't really strategize too much on that, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it and strategizing on those, and that's how I was able to have success in the last year of standing format, because it's really, really important what you can do with all three of your decks, how you can make them work together if you're able to just remove something, what tech cards you have to play, how you can build them to just punish your opponent from not being able to have that option to attack you with.
Yeah. I do like the banning format quite a bit too, because you can come up into the game with a already pre-constructed plan, right? Mm-hmm. It's a pre-constructed plan.
And right. If there is a broken deck, you can just ban it, or you can also decide to not ban it, but it just puts so much more options in a format, I think.
Exactly, but I think one of the problems with the banning format is that it's not elegant. I don't think game modes should actually modify their stuff outside of the client. For example, like when you're queuing in, when you're doing the ban format, you can't actually go into the client and go like, "Yeah, I'm gonna ban this deck." So then,
add that to the client.
Yeah,
like, exactly. How is that a big deal?
Yeah. But because they're not, it's really hard to communicate with the audience. Like most of the majority of players are playing ranked mode, right? And they are playing against every single deck, right? So, for example, if you're like bringing a lineup that you're not considering Patron to be a deck, then they release deck lists and you go like, "Yeah, this is a good deck, but only if Patron is not a deck." So, I don't think it's an elegant system. If they actually implement this format inside of Hearthstone, then sure, because everybody can practice it. But you need the connection with the people who are not like playing at the highest level or something like that.
Sure. No, but I find it pretty interesting because in also other games, CSGO, they can ban a map in normal MOBAs. They ban some certain heroes that they don't want to play against for their strategy, or they think they are just broken. And It's pretty interesting. I was just thinking of it sometimes. Why is that not happening in Hearthstone? I think it's some kind of healthy that it switched around. It will also switch meta so much around if there is that option. But it's interesting. It's an interesting topic.
It opens up so many more possibilities if you have a ban. So many different decks, so many different things that really get squeezed out by current popular decks that can't exist right now. And if you could just remove Patron, for example, you could have a way different lineup and do way different things with maybe weird maybe Shaman is the best deck with Patron gone or something. Just weird things can happen with bans, and it's really sad that we don't get to see that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things too that's limitation is just the amount of matches that could be played. Right? One of the cool things about ATLC is that you're essentially bringing 9 decks, right? You can kind of circumvent the issue with one deck being super good against because you can pick a counter for it in 9 decks. Where it's you're playing BlizzCon, you only have 3 decks, right, to play with, and so you usually you don't have that flexibility to have counter decks like that. Is that an option, maybe, just allowing players to bring more decks to BlizzCon? It would mean longer matches, obviously.
Yeah. Of course, time is always the main constraint, right? You do not want to sit there looking at a 2-hour game between two people. That's kind of not Hearthstone's what designed to do, right? It's supposed to be fast, you can pick it up and go, so I think even tournaments should reflect that. But what you're saying is if we're going to play more decks, if more decks is going to help the system, and it does. Because, for example, in ATLC, 1/6 of your lineup is Patron, whereas in normal Conquest, 1/3 of your decks are Patron. So immediately, there's kind of the power level kind of thing, right? Where, you have to bring Paladin, or you have to bring Priest. Mm-hmm. So it's more even across everywhere. If you basically, you don't get punished for playing Patron as much if you have to choose 6 decks.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Well, for the community, thanks for all the questions. I really appreciate you guys posting those and having us answer them. But we're going to wrap up the show. It's been a great time having the three of you guys on the show. Firebat's actually your first time on ValueTown. I didn't even realize that. I'm oh, my gosh. I definitely asked you at one point, right? I think we just didn't arrange maybe a time.
Maybe,
towards the end there, yeah. You weren't getting the cred yet, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I had you on Deck Wars, though. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I was on Deck Wars.
Yeah, yeah. But, just huge thanks to you guys. You want to do some shout-outs before you guys take off?
I got a shout-out that I kind of want to give. I want to shout-out to my Open tournament for all the people out there looking for more Open tournaments to play. I'm selling out right now. There's about 200 slots left in my Open tournament. I'm running it and adminning it myself, and then I'm getting it produced for the top 6, or the top 8 are getting produced. So it's going to be live streamed on my channel. The prize pool isn't great for the amount of time you have to put in, I'm going to be honest with you, but I want to try and make it as fair and balanced as possible, so it's best of 5s, and it's a lot of Swiss rounds, so whoever wins is going to be the best player that competes. That's the goal. So I want to make it as even and fair as possible. A lot of opens really struggle with that.
10 rounds of Swiss, to be exact, right?
Yeah, 10 rounds of Swiss, and they're all best of 5s. A lot of tournaments, they do the Swiss part, and they get enough rounds in the Swiss, but then they're best of 1 Swiss, or best of 3 Swiss.
Yeah,
I really want a good tournament format that's really going to decide, not based on RNG, based on skill, who actually wins the event. So,
Definitely support that effort. For sure. For sure, play that tournament. It's free to enter, right?
Correct. Yeah, free to enter. You got a prize pool, and then giveaways constantly happening. So if you don't win the tournament, if you win a round, you get a raffle ticket. And there's 10 Swiss rounds, so you can earn up to 10 raffle tickets. And then there's a raffle at the end, and you can win prizes in the raffle.
No, sounds good, man. Totally. And that starts when?
That starts on the 22nd.
Okay, so... Wow, that's this week, right?
Yeah, okay, it's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, all right, cool. Tice, any shout-outs?
Shout-out to my team, of course, Nihilam, and my teammates, Life Coach Radu and Lothar. Also, still a shout-out to Amaz. I think he made an insanely cool tournament, and how it was organized for the players, how it was organized for the viewers, I think everyone had a good time, and that is also a thing that tournament shot supposed to be. So yeah, I really thank Samas too for just making such a cool tournament.
Aw, thank you. That's nice. That's really nice.
Maz, any shout outs?
Yeah, I guess shouts to everybody involved in the ATLC, whether you're casting it, playing in it, following it, you know, talking about it. You guys are awesome. You know, you just need to support Hearthstone events. We're kind of like all a big family, right? And we just need Hearthstone to stick around, and because we're just growing together, right? I guess an extra shout out to Team Archon as well. We're doing a lot, and we're gonna have more tournaments going on. And of course, we have to crush this BlizzCon first.
Yes.
You know, we'll get a new tournament running. Season 2 should be good. And of course, if you have any feedback, let me know about ATLC. We're always trying to, you know, change things for the better. So there you go.
All right. Again, I just want to thank you three guys for coming on the show and all the viewers for watching. Our next show, I might actually have a show early. This might have two Valuetowns in the next like 5-6 days. Our next show is probably going to be on Monday, tentatively on Monday. We'll probably be an arena-centric show because I haven't had one of those in ages. So all you arena folks that have been asking for that for a long time, you know, definitely check that out. And it'll be a night show too. There's no set time right now for Valuetown just because I just like to be able to accommodate certain different times for the different potential guests because they live all around the world, so not everybody has the same, you know, openings. In the past, I would just have it the one slot, and you know, Krip used to be a host, right? And we had to stop having him being part of the show because of just that. I kind of don't want that to be a limitation this time around. So we'll have a night show, which for those of you maybe that live on, you know, in Europe, you might not be able to catch it, but you can catch the VODs all the time, you know, for free, just on youtube.com/shamanv. Also, real quick note, I started a Patreon for Valuetown 2. A lot of people have asked for a long time, how do I support the show? Never provided a way to support the show because never gave away or had t-shirts or anything like that. So I decided to start a Patreon. You guys can support in that way. Nothing changes. Everything's free still. You can watch the live shows anytime you want and VODs whenever you want. So nothing like that. But there's a lot of cool rewards and milestones there. So check that out if you, you know, if you want to support the show. Really appreciate everybody that does. And lastly, I'll try to get the VODs up, you know, shortly after. Audios, I'm still working on trying to get it up on iTunes, guys. Right now, at least for now, it's on SoundCloud. So check out any, you know, those of you that only listen to them on the way to work or whatever, check it out on SoundCloud. They have a SoundCloud app that's free on iTunes, too, so, or App Store. So, you can, you know, it's free option also. But that's it. That's going to be it for Valuetown. So for ChamMV, Amaz, Tice, and Firebat, we'll see you next time. Later.
See you.